All right, welcome to the Young Turks, guys. As usual in the Trump administration, another giant day of news. I think he's on the ropes. I think he's closer to gone than a lot of people realize. So I've got about three different stories that show that to you today. I got one in the first segment, but I think the story about what Roger Stone just said might be the most important one. Because I think it's a bellwether for what's coming. And then right before we got on the air, another news story broke, as happens almost every day in the Trump administration. Another unbelievable, outrageous story. Apparently, President Trump asked the FBI Director James Comey to shut down the investigation into Michael Flynn. Now, recently on the show, it's all a whirlwind now. I forget if it was in a regular show, in a post game, or in old school. I was talking about, look, he's flipping out over Mike Flynn. It was yesterday on the show, and trying to contact him. And everyone is saying, you can't contact Mike Flynn. He's a witness in this Russian investigation. But he's dying to contact him. You know why? Because Flynn knows. Flynn knows whatever happened, Flynn knows it, right? And so turns out he actually asked Comey to end the investigation into Flynn, which would be obstruction of justice, along with many other things. So he's in a world of trouble. I'll give you the full details in that story as soon as we have him. It's a whirlwind, guys. And then a little bit later in the program, I've got Bernie Sanders for you in this first segment. The attack against him has begun, since he's now the most likely to be, well, not the next president, because the most likely to be next president is Mike Pence. But the one after that. And then Hillary Clinton is back, oh boy. And then more devastating details about the Russians. By the way, it feels like it was a week ago. I haven't even told you the story yet on the show, because it happened just like this right before we went to air yesterday, of what Trump told the Russians in the Oval Office. And his incompetence is causing news at a record-breaking pace. One bungle after another after another. Okay, now so we're gonna get to all that, but I wanna get started. First, I'm gonna start on good news. Then I'm gonna get to maybe not better news. The good news is so big. But one of the stories on why Trump might be in a world of trouble, and then Bernie. All right, so let's get started. Okay. So in the midst of all of the craziness of Donald Trump and all the news of the day, I don't want you guys to lose track of the fact that we're winning. Now you might be thinking, wait a minute now, it depends on what you mean by we. I mean, if you're talking about progressives, unfortunately our party these days, the Democratic Party, and they are losing at a record pace all across the country, electorally and certainly in policy. Yes, well that's certainly true. But if you mean we as in the movement overall and the tide of history, well, I have great news for you guys. So now some of this you have begun to see throughout all these years, of course. But when you look at it in one moment in time, it gives you a really great window into how much we're winning. So I say we in this case, meaning progressives. My definition of progressive is people who want to expand the circle of liberty. So conservatives want everything to stay the same. So if propertied white men had all the rights, they want propertied white men to always have all the rights. Now that was conservatives back in the day, right? And then they hold on and they say, okay, non-propertied white men as well. And they say, okay, well now that's the new tradition and heritage and culture, I wanna hold on to that. Whereas progressives say, no, let's go forward. So expand that liberty to women, African Americans, and of course gay Americans. So that brings me to this story. So how much are we winning on this issue? Well, we have changed the country's mind. I mean, it's a bold thing to say almost completely, but kind of. So new Gallup poll out, 64% of Americans say same-sex marriage, not civil unions, not a half measure, not some rights, same-sex marriage should be legal. That's almost two-thirds of the country. Now, if you've gotten two-thirds of the country to agree with you on any issue, that is a giant, giant win. That is not a small number. That is fairly irreversible, and that trend continues in that direction and has not abated. To give you context here, back in 1996, Bill Clinton is president. I thought back then the country was already headed in a progressive direction, But you know what percentage of Americans thought same-sex marriage should be legal? Only 27%. Isn't that amazing? We moved it from 27% to 64% in about 20 years. Amazing, amazing. So don't lose track of the progress. Yes, the arc of history does bend towards justice. And so let me give you now how the parties line up on this. 74% of Democrats now are in favor of this. That number should be higher, but we'll take it. Most importantly, 71% of independents now think same-sex marriage should be legal. It's over. We've won on this issue. If you have 71% of independents on your side, OVAH, OVA, okay? And then look at this, even 47% of Republicans. We've almost got a majority of Republicans saying yes, same-sex marriage should be legal. And of course it is. Supreme Court ruled in 2015 that it is now legal throughout the country. But it's one thing to win on the law or on a ruling. It's another thing to win hearts and minds, and we have. And you know why? We had an excellent case to make. It's because, of course, every American should have the same rights. Nobody's asking for extra rights. Gay Americans were asking for the same exact rights as straight Americans. They had the Constitution on their side, and they had logic and reason and decency on their side. Now, it also helped that this is a rare issue where the Republicans didn't care to spend that much money against it, so thank God. And so now, one last thing about this. I know the Democratic Party loves to take credit for stuff like this, and some credit should be given. I think that it was really more progressives who were aggressively pushing in this direction, human rights activists, gay rights activists who were pushing in this direction. But you know, some folks who were Johnny Come Latelys and decided they were for same-sex marriage as late as 2013 or recently passed laws in their state, they're like, well, look at this, I'm so progressive, I'm for same-sex marriage. I know, that parade started a long time ago. Just because you jumped in front of it doesn't mean you let it. But no matter who let it, thank God it's going in that right direction, and I don't think it's ever gonna turn around. So don't lose sight of these great, great victories. So when I tell you we're gonna win on a different issue, you'll see why I say that. It's based on actual facts and history. It is, although in the short term we get hurt a lot, history is on our side. We own the future. Okay, so now let me move on to today's news. Okay. Now, Ann Coulter was one of the two people that we had banned on the show. We had to break that ban because the other person was Donald Trump. Now, we'd banned him years ago, but he broke that ban by becoming president. So credit where credit is due, I guess. And Ann Coulter then rode that wave and became relevant because she was one of his main backers. And hence, we started to talk about her as part of the national conversation. Before, she was just a sideshow, maybe a freak show, part of the circus, right? And just trying to get attention. But she does represent the extreme right wing in this country in some ways. So she became relevant in that sense. And she wrote a book, for example, called In Trump We Trust. And that really did capture the zeitgeist, at least of the right wing at the time. And she wrote, she said that she worshiped, quote, worshiped him with, quote, blind loyalty. Well, she's relevant again because apparently she has opened her eyes. And that worship appears to be coming to an end. Now, again, as a particular performer in this circus, don't care much about what Ann Coulter thinks, but as some representative of the extreme right wing, it is an important bellwether. So now it looks like his own forces are beginning to withdraw from the battlefield. So let me give you Ann Coulter's latest quotes. She told the Daily Caller, a conservative website, everyone who voted for him knew his personality was grotesque. Damn. Now, I don't remember you saying that, Ann, during the campaign. I don't remember you calling him grotesque. I remember you talking about worshiping him. If he was so grotesque, why did you worship him? They're heading for the exits, guys. Okay, that's on his personality, but it's about to get worse. Now, she says, as far as the issues go, boy, things don't look good. All right, I love it. She says, I'm not very happy with what has happened so far. I guess we have to try to push him to keep his promises. But if he doesn't keep his promises, I'm out. Here's Coulter looking for the, wait, where's the chute? Where's the chute? Get the hell out of there. Now, why is she saying that, and why is this relevant again to the national conversation? Because it is true that Donald Trump has not kept his promises to the right wing. So, for example, story out yesterday in the news about immigration. I mean, that was his number one issue, right? Build a wall, and I'm going to make sure you guys get higher wages because we're going to keep the immigrants out. And it turns out he cut a deal with the giant farming companies, and he's going to let them keep hiring exactly who they were hiring. So, well, then that defeats the whole point. He's targeting like fourth graders, threw out a guy who was a business owner in Indiana, and going after political enemies. But the whole point was raising wages and etc. He's not going to do any of that. He said that he was against the global financial elite and he was going to drain the swamp. And then he put his top one, five of his top advisors are Goldman Sachs guys. The cultures of the world claimed that they hated the Goldman Sachs global elite. So he said he was going to get on NAFTA. He says now he's reconsidering. He doesn't even know what NAFTA is. So he's delivered on almost none of his promises to the right wing. So some of you might be happy about that. You know, he hasn't come anywhere near building the wall. Ann Coulter's upset that there's no progress being made. She's asking for people to send bricks into Congress to help build a wall. But I mean, that's the least of the issues. The real issues are the populist things that he promised, including, by the way, getting tough on China. Now he says he didn't know how complicated it was. It turns out you can't get tough on China. Well, if you're a right winger, you got to be pretty pissed. So far, he's given you almost nothing. He tried that travel ban, and that didn't even work because he bungled it. So, like, you love the Muslim ban, travel ban, whichever one you want to call it. I know for PR purposes, you're calling it the travel ban, but the reason you loved it was because it was the Muslim ban. But he couldn't put it into effect because he's a moron. So, at the end of the day, what do you have? Like the rest of the country, you got nothing. That's why they're looking to get out now. So, she says to this point, where's the great negotiation? That budget the Republicans pushed through was like a practical joke. Did we win anything? Now you might not agree with her, you might have thought it was draconian and etc. But for the extreme right wing, they're like, that was not nearly draconian enough. You've got us nothing. It's partly because he doesn't know what the hell he's doing, and the establishment Republicans have taken over, and they're doing exactly what they want to do. Hey, you know, don't rock the boat, keep the establishment in charge. And just give the rich and the donors some tax breaks, and that's really what we're doing here. And that's all. You're not going to get any of your populist agenda through. Okay? She said Americans don't like that. I don't like that. That's talking about hiring his kids. And listen to what she says there. That's the one fascist thing he's done: hiring his kids. Wow. Now I know that they're more moderate. In the scope of this administration, there are no moderates there. But among the insanely right wing and all the establishment characters, et cetera, Jared Kushner, Ivanka Trump are in the non-extreme right wing, I guess. So Ann Coulter doesn't like that. But to call him fascist, I mean, Donald Trump, those are the two people he trusts most, Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner. So if you do that, you're basically going to war with Donald Trump. They're getting the hell out of there, man. This ship is on fire and the rats are looking for the exits. So last one, she says, I'll say we had no choice, but the Trump haters were right. It's a nightmare. I can't even contemplate that. Right now, I'm still rooting for him to turn around. Damn. Na 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 na. When your base leaves you, you ain't got nothing left. So I've been telling you from day one that he's going to head down to 25%. Right now, he's still holding it around 39%. 39% for a new president is horrible. 25% means you're on your way out. Now, the only way he gets down to 25% is not if you convince Democrats to hate him even more. That doesn't help you in the numbers. It's if his base goes, oh, the guy was full of crap. Turns out he's not going to do any of the things he promised. It turns out he's just going to do what Rice Preberson, Paul Ryan, and the establishment wanted all along. Yeah, you're damn right that's what he's going to do. He's going to do what the big donors tell him to do. Just a normal, slimy politician. And now even the right wing has begun to wake up to that. I'll see you at 25%. Okay. Now, let's turn to the Democrats and their problems. Okay. Politico with a very interesting article about Bernie Sanders and whether he's going to run for president. All right, so the drama has begun already. And there is two different lines of attack here. I am amused by one and angered by the other. So let's give you some of the quotes from this piece written by Edward Isaac Dover and Gabrielle Debenedetti. Sorry for how I pronounce your names. You can return the favor with trying to pronounce Cenk Uygur. Okay. They explain, many top Democrats are furious that Bernie Sanders appears to be running for president again, or at least planning to drag out his decision long enough to freeze the race around him. Okay. Now, it's again two different sides to how I view the article as well. So one is, what is the agenda of the people writing the article? Two, and much more importantly, what is the agenda of the people who gave him this story? So the Democratic establishment goes to these writers and says, okay, here's what we're mad about, and that's why they write the story. And it is telling of what those folks think. So that's why, in a sense, the story is important and helps us understand the landscape. So as you see in that article there, the Democrats apparently are furious that Bernie Sanders is thinking of running for president. Why would you be furious that the most popular person on your side, that is also happens to be the most popular politician in the country, is thinking of running for president? Shouldn't you be overjoyed? I mean, what a weird statement, isn't it? Imagine if like JFK is the most popular politician in the country. Democrats are like, oh, we're furious that he's thinking of running. Barack Obama, if he was the most popular politician in the country, he's thinking of running. Oh, we're furious about it. Why would you be furious? He's on your side. That's because they think he's not on our side. Not the whole Democrat independent thing. No, they think, no, he actually wants to get money out of politics. He's not going to do what the donors and the lobbyists and the consultants want. Oh no, watch out for Bernie Sanders. Well, at least you're showing your hand in a very obvious way. So now they go on to explain, outside of his tighter than ever inner circle, friends and staffers who'd be happy to back him again say they rarely, if ever, speak to Sanders these days. Okay, now this is where they are pretending to care about Sanders supporters. Now, look, to be fair, they might have gotten one or two people inside the Sanders camp to say something like that. But overall, Democratic establishment, please don't feign any interest in, like, oh golly gee, I just care so much about the Sanders supporters. Whatever will become of them? Okay, now for the ones who are mad that Sanders hasn't told them what he's going to do yet, okay, that's your problem, man. He doesn't owe you anything. He'll tell you when he wants to run, when he's going to run. Like, what? We just got started. We just got past 100 days of Donald Trump. Why does he have to tell you something that's going to happen 3.5 years from now? Look, I know I'm not unaware of the machinations here. They're thinking, okay, wait, should I join Joe Biden's campaign? I got to get paid, right? Should I join Elizabeth Warren's campaign or whoever is running, right? So Bernie, you got to tell us so that I can get onto the campaign. Yeah, but that's your interest. That's not necessarily the country's interest or Bernie Sanders' interest. Okay, so they explain Sanders hasn't made any decision and he tends to dismiss the discussion about 2020 as dumb. He hasn't fully committed to running for re-election to the Senate next year. Yes, that's his prerogative. I mean, on the one hand, the Democratic establishment keeps saying, oh, he's going to be 79, that's way too old for him to run. On the other hand, they're like, why won't you tell us what you're going to do 3 years from now? And so which one is it? Like, maybe he thinks, well, I don't know how I'm going to feel 2 years from now. I don't know how I'm going to feel when I'm 77. Give me a minute here. Let's try to pass some policy. Let's fight Trump. Let's figure out what's going on. Let's actually push the country in the right direction. No, tell me what's happening. Tell me what's happening. Because everybody in Washington needs jobs. And all of our jobs are on the line. So you got to tell us what's happening. Okay, take it easy, man. He calls it dumb and Politico goes, oh, great. Then let's write that article talking about the thing that he thinks is dumb. Okay, so now they say, but the senator who'll be 79 next time the New Hampshire primary rolls around is continuing to put himself at the center of the conversation. He's introduced a Medicare for All bill this week that he hopes will force others to sign on. Like, there's 1,000 frustrating quotes in this article, but that might be the top one. What do you want him to do? He cares about the issues. They find it in Washington. They find it so bizarre that you would actually care about this shit. Why don't you care about electoral politics and who's going to win and who's going to have power and who's going to have money? Why do you care about Medicare for All? Now you're putting yourself in the middle of it. He's putting himself in the middle of it because no one else has co-sponsored it. Because he's the only one fighting for Medicare for All in the Senate right now. Because he cares. I know it's so foreign to Washington. That's why they're never going to understand him. They're like, that's so wrong. Why? If you're not going to run for president and grab all the power, why are you in the middle of this issue? Because he cares about it? I know. totally foreign thought to everybody who works in Washington. Okay, now they explain he's joining Ohio Governor John Kasich for a CNN town hall tonight that's being held on the evening of the Center for American Progress's forward-looking ideas conference, an event Sanders wasn't invited to. Indeed. Okay, Center for American Progress, unfortunately, is now the epicenter of the Democratic establishment and the corporate Democrats. So they did this, what Politico describes as a forward-looking conference. They called the Ideas Conference. They invited no progressives to it. They didn't even invite the most popular politician in the country, who's on their side, because they don't want to hear from him. They want to hear from their corporate buddies. So they invited a bunch of politicians. It's like a useless, complete useless conference. So in this case, he's like, okay, Kasich, I'll debate him on the issues because I care about the issues. Let's do the debate. They're like, why are you showing up to the debate? Like, nobody even invited you. Did you think maybe you should write an article about why this guy doesn't get invited when he has the best poll numbers? Did that not occur to you? Okay. By the way, let me say one more thing about his age. Right now, everybody's talking about it. You might not see, but in Washington, everybody's talking about how Joe Biden's going to run. Joe Biden's going to the first primary and caucus states. He's doing events there. That is a telltale sign that he's going to run. But every time you mention Sanders, oh, he's too old. Too old. He can't run. He's too old. Do you know how much older Bernie Sanders is than Joe Biden? Well, that's got to be a big difference. 10, 20 years? 1 year. Bernie Sanders would be 79 in the 2020 elections. Biden would be 78. But not one soul has mentioned how Joe Biden is too old. Because if you're an establishment guy, awesome. Bernie, why are you here? Why are you in the center? Why are you not deciding yet? What's wrong with you? We're furious with you, Bernie, for being so popular. Okay. Now, here's Marcos Melitzis, Daily Coast founder, former progressive. I'm sure he'll be mad at that. But Marcos, what are you doing, man? I know there's not a Democrat party official that you haven't fallen in love with. Okay, go ahead, tell us. He says, the fact that Tom Perez has given Sanders a platform without Sanders genuinely agreeing to work towards unity has made a mockery of the whole process and literally divided the party more than it was before the tour began. It's been a disaster. Wait. Why does Bernie Sanders have to promise unity to Tom, who the hell are you, Perez? Tom Perez barely squeaked in to be the head of the DNC. The head of the DNC, you guys told me, was not that relevant. When Debbie Wasserman Schultz was the head of the DNC, you were like, oh, it's not a big deal. What are you guys getting all upset over, right? Now, Tom Perez, who nobody had heard of before outside of Washington, who was sent in by Obama to make sure that Keith Ellison lost, and the corporate Democrats are thrilled with, but has no support in the country. Nobody knows about him. What's his poll numbers? When they went to do the unity tour, he would get booed and Bernie Sanders would get wild applause. But you think the most popular politician in the country should bow his head to Tom frickin' Perez? Why don't you frame the question, Marcos, the other way around? What the hell is Tom Perez doing on a unity tour if he can't even unite behind, how many times do I have to say it before it gets through your thick, thick skull? The most popular politician in the country. He's on your side. It's a gift. What are you doing? No, I'm furious with him. Why won't he bend his head to the establishment Democrats? Because he's right and they're wrong. Last time the establishment Democrats had a brilliant idea, it was Bernie Sanders should bow his head to Hillary Clinton because she's got this thing figured out. Hey, Marcos. Hey, Politico. Hey, all the Democrats in Washington. How did that turn out? We were right. You were wrong. Hillary Clinton was an absolute disaster. We're not going to make that mistake again. We're not going to lose to Trump again. We're not going to lose to the Republicans again. You want to torpedo a guy who the country loves? So what? So you can get paid? Our answer is hell no, and I'm being polite. Melitzis continues. Yes, Perez and company are clearly afraid of Sanders and his followers, but letting Sanders make a mockery of the party doesn't exactly help it build in the long haul. You're making a mockery of the party. So here's a guy who's been gifted to you that has nearly now the doubling the poll numbers of Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And you go, huh, you actually want to fight for policy and the things we pretended to care about all this time. And you're incredibly popular. You're making a mockery of us. Well, he is making a mockery of you, that's true. Now, by the way, Bernie's overall popularity, let me give you two recent polls, 57%. Harvard-Harris study, that was the highest number that any politician in the country got. And then Fox News, they certainly don't like that independent Bernie Sanders, call him a socialist all the time. What do you get? A Fox News poll got a 61% approval rating there. Highest in both polls. Number one in the country, and they keep spitting in his face. Okay, now here's more from Politico. He's a constant reminder. He allows the healing that needs to take place to not take place, said one longtime senior party official, who like others remains too worried about appearing to oppose Sanders to speak on the record. Now, if you had the Democratic voters on your side, forget the Republican voters and the independents for a second. You keep telling me, oh, he's not even in the Democratic Party. He's an independent. He's actual progressive. Blah, blah. Well, he's not even part of the corporate Democrats, right? Okay. Well, if then I presume that you have the Democratic voters on your side, right? Then why are you afraid to oppose him on the record? Shouldn't you be really popular in opposing him? Oh, you don't have the Democratic voters on your side. You're afraid of pissing off all the Democratic voters while shiving him in the back and giving anonymous quotes to Politico. Oh, that's why you're doing it. How do I know? Again, it's not my gut, it's not my intuition, it's numbers. So Harvard-Harris survey, what percentage of Democratic voters approve of Bernie Sanders? Again, number one, 80%. 80%. Four out of five Democrats are on our side, not your side. So don't pretend that you represent Democratic voters or the Democratic Party. You don't, and that's why you're afraid to come out and say it publicly. Okay. But by the way, I don't know anybody on Bernie's side who's afraid to come out publicly. Here I am, right? Here are all the other folks that are on Bernie's side. They're all public. You know why they don't mind saying it publicly? Because we're not embarrassed about our position. We're not embarrassed by our policy points. We're not embarrassed about the guy that we back. And we have the voters on our side and you don't. So I guess that's a sad day for you. Okay, Donna Brazil chimes in. This ought to be good. She says, he's not someone we should go to. Really, Donna? Wow, what a shocking conclusion that is coming from you, former head of the DNC. He's not someone who we should go to build or rebuild or expand our party unless he's willing. What do you mean, unless he's willing? So here he goes on the unity tour and he actually pushes for progressive positions that you guys have been pretending that you would like to do decades later, but you believe in the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. So it sounds like you're not willing. He's saying, let's go forward, let's do Medicare for all. Are you guys willing? I'm the most popular politician in the country. I have all the progressives on my side. Medicare for all, nobody shows up. It's not that he's not willing, you're not willing. So he's not someone we should go to. If Hillary Clinton was polling at 80% among Democrats and 61% among the entire country, and she was the most popular politician there was, you think they'd say, oh, she's not someone we should go to. Like if that happened in the last election, oh, no, she should step down. She's leading right now, so she should get out of the race. No, they would say the exact opposite. They did. Even though she was horribly unpopular, they said, no, it's gotta be her, it's gotta be her. Okay. Gee, I wonder if it isn't about winning elections, and it isn't winning about policy, it's about maintaining their power for all these people. Why don't you just make it more obvious while you're at it? Okay, now here's more from the article. When he warned those up for re-election in 2018 against centrism, this is referring to Jeff Weaver, who's campaign manager for Bernie Sanders, it raised eyebrows in the room. After the Democrats lost to Donald Trump, they lost the House, the Senate, 69 out of 99 state legislatures, the Supreme Court, they've lost everything there is, going the so-called centrist route. Bernie Sanders' campaign manager, former campaign manager, now is at Our Revolution, says, hey, maybe centrism is not the right idea. And in Washington, everybody's like, raised eyebrows, really? Well, then how do we get donor money? It isn't about winning elections, it's about getting paid for these guys. Okay. Touring the country with Perez, Sanders sought to stamp his economic populism on the head of the DNC, but the people familiar with the arrangement said he also spent much of the time traveling with the party chair on the private Gulfstream jet, getting to learn about Perez's personal history, which he hadn't bothered to read up on earlier. So which finally comes me back to the actual writers of this article. So like I said, part of it is good, hey, at least we find out where the corporate Democrats stand. Part of it is, hey, my friends in the Democratic Party, you are my cherished sources. who would you like me to shiv? Oh, Bernie Sanders would love to. I will write that he's going on a Gulfstream jet. Was it his jet? Well, whose jet is it, right? Oh, he didn't write that part, but you smeared him like as if like Bernie's some sort of high-flying guy who said, oh, yeah, I can't wait to get on the Gulfstream. Why did you put that detail in there? Why didn't you flip it the other way around and go, why is Tom Perez on a Gulfstream jet with Bernie Sanders? What the hell's going on with the head of the DNC? Where the hell did he get that money from? But you didn't write it that way. In fact, the whole premise of the article is, what's wrong with Bernie Sanders? Why won't he either declare and seek power or get the hell out of the race, which is what we would really, really prefer. You can tell from all these quotes. Why didn't you write it in reverse? Why didn't you write the article saying Bernie Sanders is the most popular politician in the country? Why won't Democrats back him? What a bizarre, bizarre thing to do if you seek to win elections where you're actively rejecting the guy who the country apparently really, 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 really likes. Unlike any other politician who they mainly dislike. But they didn't even think to write the article that way in Politico. The Politico was like, hatchets, yes, ready. Scalpel, yes. Shiv, ready. Okay, not just the Gulfstream jet. The other thing is, he hadn't bothered to read up on Tom Perez's history. He's fighting for Medicare for all, for $15 minimum wage. He's got all the policy issues down pat, and you criticize him for it. And now, your attack against him is that he doesn't know the bio of Tom Irrelevant Perez enough? Because the whole mindset is Bernie Sanders must bow his head. He must bow his head to Tom Perez and Donna Brazile and to every lobbyist and every consultant and every Democratic Party hack in Washington. And if he doesn't bow his head, then he's not giving us unity. It's a debacle. He's ruining the party. And he doesn't even know the bio, he didn't Wikipedia Tom Perez enough. What an outrage. Why don't you think about it in reverse? What does Tom Perez know about Bernie Sanders? Why doesn't Tom Perez ever back Bernie Sanders' progressive policy calls while they're on that so-called unity tour? Bernie Sanders says Medicare for all. Tom Perez says, we want to get together with everybody. We like unity and love. And we want to bring people together, blacks and whites and women and men. We want to bring them together. And bring them together and then do what, Tom? And do what? I can't tell you that. My donors don't want me to say a thing about that. Yeah, that's what I thought, Tom. So I got a message for the Democratic Party. Either you unify with the most rational choice there is, the most popular guy in the country in politics. Otherwise, admit you're not for unity. You're for your own power. You don't give a damn about unity. You don't give a damn about winning. That's why you lost to incompetent buffoon Donald Trump. How dare you even talk about anything as if you know how to win in politics when you just lost to Donald frickin' Trump and admit that you don't ever and will never care about policy. Okay, gee, I wonder why Bernie's got 80% approval among Democratic voters and you guys are hiding in the bushes, Young Turks. Guys, we'll get to tweets later. I got a thousand things to share with you guys. Let's go to the next Democratic story and then I'm going to be back to Trump. Okay. Let's go to Hillary Clinton story, guys. There we go. So Hillary Clinton has decided to join the fight. God help us. Okay. Paul Blumenthal from the Huffington Post explains, 6 months after losing the presidential election to Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton has launched Onward Together, a nonprofit to fund groups that encourage political involvement. Well, kind of. Political involvement if you're doing the right things, but not if you're not. My guess is that they're not going to back any primaries against corporate Democrats, right? Of course, of course. As long as you toe the line, then they will be onward together. If you don't toe the line, okay. She explains, Hillary Clinton says, from the Women's March to airports where communities are welcoming immigrants and refugees to town hall meetings, in every community, Americans are speaking up and speaking out like never before. In other words, there's a parade. How do I jump in front of it? Okay, great. She cited new activist groups, including Indivisible, Swing Left, and Run for Something, that emerged in the wake of the Women's March. She also sent out a tweet that I want to share with you guys that listed a couple of other groups. She said, again, Indivisible Swing Left, Color of Change, that's a great group. Emerge America, Run for Something, and Governor Howard Dean. She says, this year hasn't been what I envisioned, but I know what I'm still fighting for, a kinder, big-hearted, inclusive America. Onward! We're going to America, we're going to Seattle, we're okay. All right, now, I butchered that Howard Dean quote. I like how they throw Howard Dean in there. Howard Dean used to be a progressive fighter, but for a long time now, he's been a lobbyist in Washington. And so they always throw him in there like, remember Howard Dean? Back when he was a progressive fighter, they're like, Howard Dean is strange. He's really weird, he's an angry guy, there's something wrong with Howard Dean, right? Now that he's been a lobbyist for a long time in Washington, they're like, Howard Dean! Howard Dean's great, he's smart, he's a progressive, he's on our side, Howard Dean! Yeah, okay, I know, you got in your hot tub time machine, and now think that you're gonna impress us with the words, the name Howard Dean. Now look, some of those groups do really good work, some of them do great work, others I don't know well enough. But I'd be surprised if you were gonna get a buck from Hillary Clinton and her buddies if you didn't toe the line exactly as they want you to. Okay, in fact, Hillary Clinton explains, in some cases, we'll provide direct funding to these organizations. Now, they can't really do much else, to be fair to them, they have no popular support. Her support evaporated the minute she lost the election. She's now polling at 35%. That's actually lower than Donald Trump. So she doesn't have any popular support. I mean, is she really, I don't know. I hope to God she's not thinking of running again. I don't think, maybe I'm being naive, I don't think that's what this is about. I think this is about, we're still relevant. Remember everybody, the Clintons still have power. Who knows, I might run for mayor in New York City. Now I've got a pack, I'm powerful, I'm important. Come on, give me money. Oh, you know what, who knows, Chelsea Clinton might run. You never know. Remember, the Clinton brand is still really, really valuable. Give me your money and then I will direct it to allies who know how to do the right thing, okay? They explain, Onward Together has not yet announced whether it will disclose donors or set any other policies limiting donations. Okay, here, I'll break the news for them. They will not have limits on donations. And there are many donors they will not disclose. Okay, so there's your breaking news. Because that's what they always do, that's the same game that they're gonna play. And so, look, I get it. Some people could say, hey, look, people join the fight, what else you want? Great, okay, they fight from that side, we fight from this side. And there's value to that, and maybe that's a fair point. And the proof's gonna be in the pudding, so we don't quite know yet. But if history is any guide, the folks who have set up this pack, including Hillary Clinton, have never really pushed for progressive policy positions unless they say, oh, but super, super incremental. Let's just like take a 1% step and then the donors are comfortable that you haven't really rocked the boat. Remember, it's the donor's boat, so be careful, don't rock it too much. Let's go nice and easy status quo with 1-5% change. So you get lulled into a sense of complacency and we keep taking all the money out, right? My guess is that's the direction they're gonna go. But I would love for them to prove me wrong. Like they get in the fight, they roll up their sleeves and they're like, okay, Medicare for all, $15 minimum wage, free college education, no more wars, let's go, roll up the sleeves, let's go. Come on voters, let's go, let's do grassroots, I'm gonna go knock on doors. Wait for it, but don't hold your breath. By the way, we have a poll on this, tytnetwork.com/Hillary. Should Hillary join the resistance or go back into the woods? I believe last I checked, Into the Woods was winning 93-7. No, oh, and then the Hillary Clinton, no, that's not true. Then the Hillary Clinton bots came in and started voting. You know that now it's got over 100,000 votes. And still they couldn't get to 50-50. Do you know that when you vote in our poll, but you're not a real person, we can tell. So when the number of people who voted in the poll is way higher than the number of people who actually visited that page, we know that, correct, the record's been there. Let's correct this poll, this is not going well for us. We're losing 93-7. They cranked it all the way up, had a bunch of BS votes that got her to 57% join the resistance. And then the actual human being showed up and they're like, no, I don't think so. And now they're back to under 50%. Okay, so Hillary Clinton and all the donor class in Washington, if you have actual human beings on your side, then have them vote at tytnetwork.com/Hillary. Otherwise, keep your bots. Okay. Another story about the possible fate of Donald Trump. Let's do this. Okay. Weird happenings in Washington right now that lead me to believe that Donald Trump is in way bigger trouble than even the press understand. So obviously, there's the James Comey firing, which is a firestorm on top of all the general incompetence and controversies that he's caused. And now we find out that he accidentally gave classified information to the Russians in the Oval Office. And now we find out on top of that today that he asked James Comey to stop investigating Mike Flynn, which is arguably obstruction of justice. And the reason he wants him to stop investigating is Mike Flynn knows the deal that happened with the Russians. That is a fair assumption. Okay, so then Marco Rubio randomly starts tweeting out Bible verses. That's strange. He tweets out, "Peace I leave with you, peace I give you. Not as the world gives, do I give to you. Do not let your hearts be troubled or afraid." John 14:27. Apparently, this is a Bible verse that people turn to in very, very troubling times. Okay, then he quotes another Bible verse. He says, "Commit to the Lord whatever you do, and your plans will succeed. The Lord works out everything for his own ends." What's going on here? Is Jesus coming back? What? So now, a lot of people saw this on social media, including conservatives, and they're like, that's not normal. What the hell is next? Now, of course, other conservatives jump in and go, what? He say, hey, you liberals, you don't understand the Bible. The guy loves the Bible. He's quoting the Bible. How come he never quotes the Bible on other days? Why today, of all days, all of a sudden these things about, like, don't worry, as things come to a horrible end, God works in mysterious ways and you will be comforted. Like, as I see those quotes, I think either Marco Rubio has a sex scandal that he's going to about to tell us, or he knows something about the Trump situation and how bad it is more than we do. Okay. Now, but even so, by itself, I wouldn't have done that story if that was the only clue that we had. But let's look at the other context. Then we turn to Roger Stone, who goes on Alex Jones' show and says something incredibly strange. He tells you about how they are going to attack Donald Trump. But mind you, no one has actually said this yet other than Roger Stone. Let's watch, then I'll explain.
It's a disclaimer right up front. They're going to say that this is a conspiracy theory, but it's the stone of cold truth. They are going to claim that Donald Trump has Alzheimer's and that it is progressive, and that is progressing, and that is the source of his insanity. I've talked to the president fairly recently. He is sharp as a tack. There is no evidence of any deterioration in his thought process. This is completely bogus. But under the 25th Amendment, if a majority of the cabinet plus the vice president agree that the president is incapacitated, well, then he is removed. And if he seeks to fight the charges, it goes to the U.S. House of Representatives, where erosion among Republicans could destroy the Trump presidency. This is bogus. They could not beat him at the ballot box. So now they seek to remove him by claiming that he's insane. Look at his record on the economy. Look at his appointment to the Supreme Court. Look at the way he has the Chinese doing our dirty work in North Korea. And you will see he's not crazy. He's a genius.
I was about to say, if that's insane, we need more of it.
But this is the game plan. Watch carefully. You're going to see the word Alzheimer's more and more in the next several days.
Well, I'm paying attention very, very carefully. And I had not seen Alzheimer's until Roger Stone said it. So either he knows what the Republicans are going to claim about Donald Trump, certainly doesn't have any worthy context in the Democratic camp, or he just planted the story. And I think that is far more likely. It's a classic Roger Stone move to say, now what they're saying about how Donald Trump is insane is not true. Who said he was insane? Nobody said it. Now, the thing about Alzheimer's, let me tell you something. Did I say Alzheimer's? I think people might be saying Alzheimer's soon. Remember, everybody, Alzheimer's. But he doesn't have it. Now, that's not just to pull the shoot. That's a legal defense. If you're worried that they've got good evidence on you colluding with the Russians. That's why you say, oh, they're saying he's insane. So you could later say, oh, no, he was, poor Donald Trump was losing his mind. He had already gone insane, insanity defense. So of course, you know, you can't hold him responsible for the deal that he made with the Russians. He was, he had Alzheimer's. No, look at all his erratic behavior. They have begun to set up his legal defense. Tick tock, tick tock. Nobody said Alzheimer's but Roger Stone. And Roger Stone is very connected to Donald Trump. He bragged to the Young Turks that he was the guy who convinced Donald Trump to run in the first place. He just said he's been talking to him all the time. By the way, Donald Trump recently said he hadn't talked to Roger Stone in a long, long time. As usual, one or probably both of them are lying. Now, final part of this is, I told you that if he was going to go, it's the Republicans who, of course, have to push him out. They're in the majority, right? So the first thing is you'd see Republicans start to backpedal away from him. Today, Ben Sasse, so many others, Jeff Flake in the past, etc. There, Chaffetz is leaving Congress so he doesn't have to investigate Donald Trump. And then I said step two would be all the people that he wronged on the Republican side who would then look for revenge. John McCain out today going, God, I can't believe what he did with the Russians. And John Kasich saying it's outrageous what he did with James Comey. So all the guys he'd wronged in the past. And I said the final step would be Paul Ryan, because Paul Ryan is of course the Speaker of the House, and he's the one that's going to have to make the decision on, are we going to move forward on impeachment? So if you have the threat of impeachment, then he resigns and claims Alzheimer's, right? So when you go to Ryan's spokesperson, he says that Congressman Ryan, quote, hopes for a full explanation of the facts from the administration. And it has begun. This could happen much quicker than you anticipate. I think all of these are very telling. Tick tock, tick tock. Young Turks. Hey guys, we're back on the Young Turks. Let's go to some tweets real quick for you guys. An American in Canada writes in, if Donald wants to use Alzheimer's as a legal defense, fine. Let the court appoint the doc to prove it. He'll probably get a doctor's note from that crazy doctor he has. Trust me, Donald Trump is the most insane person. That, on that, I would trust you, actually, I've ever dealt with. So, Woke Bay writes in, I don't know if that's Haas. TYT is going to need a 3-hour show to keep up with all these Trump news. Mandy writes in, when you are batshit crazy, that so batshit crazy that agriculture runs, you bought the entire farm, dude. And Santos Huante writes in, Hillary's onward progressive pack is just Clinton Foundation by a different name. Exactly right, Santos. So you can talk to us throughout the show at hashtag TYT live. Okay, now let's go on to what was supposed to be the major story of today. Trump did in the Oval Office. Okay, so Trump has the Russian ambassador and the foreign minister in. And he's going to talk to Kislyak and Lavrov. He's apparently going to tell them highly classified information. Oops, you're not supposed to do that. But of course, he's a clown and doesn't know any better. So the Washington Post was the first to break this story. Let's start with them. They explained President Trump revealed highly classified information to Russian foreign minister and ambassador in a White House meeting last week, according to current and former US officials, who said Trump's disclosures jeopardize a critical source of intelligence on the Islamic State. Now, understand why this is so important. First of all, of course, revealing classified information is important. Revealing it to the Russians is even more important, on ISIS even more important, and especially in Syria, where the Russian interests are not the same as our interests. So they claim that they're fighting ISIS along with us, and they are opposed to ISIS. But on the other hand, they support the Assad government and many other fighters in the area that we do not support. So giving them that information could be terrible. Okay, so they explained further, the information the president relayed had been provided by a US partner through an intelligence sharing arrangement considered so sensitive that details have been withheld from allies and tightly restricted even within the US government, officials said. The problem is they had to share it with the president, and the president's a dunce. So he's the least reliable, least trustworthy guy you could share that information with. We now find out that it is in fact the Israelis who had given us that information. And earlier they were concerned about giving information to Donald Trump because of exactly this type of situation. And remember, the Russians are allied with Iran in Syria, and Iran is in some ways the biggest enemy of Israel. So they're like, oh, you just gave our top secret information to the Russians who can share it with Iran. That's why we were afraid to give you information, because we were worried that the American president is a total and complete idiot. And they were proven right. The partner, they explain, in this case again, later reporting revealed it was Israel, had not given the United States permission to share the material with Russia. An official said Trump's decision to do so endangers cooperation from an ally that has access to the inner workings of the Islamic State. Now, he apparently disclosed their operations in a certain city. Now the Russians know about that. And Israel thinks, well, if I give you information and then you reveal, you know, that information to others, then people could find out who my sources are and who I have inside the Islamic State and what kind of information I'm getting. Disaster. So it's not that Israel isn't great allies with America, but they think if I share it with my ally, he might share it with my enemy. So there goes our information from Israel. Great job. The ally has repeatedly warned American officials that it would cut off access to such sensitive information if it were shared too widely, the former official said. In this case, the fear is that Russia will be able to determine exactly how the information was collected and could disrupt the allies' espionage efforts. Okay, now, how serious was it? They explained, this is code word information, said a US official familiar with the matter, using terminology that refers to one of the highest classification levels used by American spy agencies. Trump revealed more information to the Russian ambassador than we have shared with our own allies. It's so secret, they have code words for it. And they were worried that Hillary Clinton had a private server. By the way, I was worried about that too, but that is not even 1% of what Trump did here. There's no information that anyone actually broke into that server, or the Russians, or our enemies, or etc., and got any kind of information, let alone the most highly classified information. And Trump, instead of like, hey, did you store it in the right way? Did you follow all the regulations? Just comes out, goes, hey, Russians, you're in the Oval Office. Here's all our code word information, highly classified stuff. In the middle, for about ISIS that Israel gave us. More from Washington Post. For almost anyone in government discussing such matters with an adversary would be illegal. As president, Trump has broad authority to declassify government secrets, making it unlikely that his disclosures broke the law. So later he will brag about that and cause himself more trouble because, again, too stupid to understand the ramifications of his actions. I'll get to that in a second. They further explain, Russia could identify our sources or techniques, the senior official said. A former intelligence official who handled high-level intelligence on Russia said that, given the clues Trump provided, quote, I don't think that it would be that hard for Russian spy services to figure this out. So they already know the city, they already know that it's about laptops and on airplanes, and they know the mission that we think ISIS is gonna launch, but they could furthermore figure out who, it's potentially possible that they could figure out who our sources were or Israel's sources were and then eliminate them. Okay, White House officials defended Trump. The story's false, said Dina Powell, Deputy National Security Advisor for Strategy. The president only discussed the common threats that both countries faced, but officials could not explain why staff members nevertheless felt it necessary to alert the CIA and the NSA. So what happened after the meeting is, people in the room are like, oh no, he just told the Russians top secret information. We have to tell the CIA and NSA immediately. Later, Trump goes, go lie for me, go say it didn't happen. So Dina Powell comes out and says it didn't happen. They're like, okay, then why did you tell the CIA and the NSA in a panic that it did? It doesn't matter, Trump's gonna tell him the truth later accidentally anyway. Never lie for Trump. He's gonna throw you under a bus. So a US official said, now we go to BuzzFeed. They added to the reporting, they say, quote, it's far worse than what has already been reported. Oh, damn, because what's been reported is already pretty bad. Okay, now we go back to the Washington Post. A former senior US official says, it is all kind of shocking. Trump seems to be very reckless and doesn't grasp the gravity of things he's dealing with, especially when it comes to intelligence and national security. I told you, he's a child, he doesn't understand anything, and he's too lazy and incompetent to figure it out. Now we go back to BuzzFeed. This is an Israeli intelligence official. They say, we have an arrangement with America which is unique to the world of intelligence sharing. To know that this intelligence is shared with others without our prior knowledge, that is for us our worst fears confirmed. Okay, now let's go to what part of what Donald Trump said in bragging to the Russians, because he's a child. He's like, oh, I have toys. I have a lot of toys. I want to brag about it. He said, I get great intel. I have people brief me on great intel every day. Oh, Jesus Christ, man. Yet they know that. They're the Russians. They also have great intel. You're not supposed to brag and tell them what the intel is. And besides which, you're a freaking embarrassment, man. Who goes to the Russians and tries to impress them by saying things like, I get great intel. I have people brief me on great intel every day. Everybody knows that. You're the president of the United States. Everybody knows you get intelligence every day. But he's the only one who didn't know it. So he's like, did you know that they brief me every day? Yes, schmuck. We all knew that. Okay. Bob Corker is asked about this, Republican in the Senate. He says, obviously, referring to the White House, they're in a downward spiral right now. And I've got to figure out a way to come to grips with all that's happening. Republicans starting to bail. Then he's got to have McMaster, who's the National Security Advisor, lie for him. This is not going to end well. McMaster says right after this news broke, at no time were intelligence sources or methods discussed, and the president did not disclose any military operations that were not already publicly known. And then he went and doubled down and said, I was in the room. It didn't happen. Okay, that's what McMaster says. Then, of course, here comes Trump with yet another bungle. Eve, after he had Dina Powell and McMaster and Spicer and everybody come out and say it didn't happen, the story's false, he confirms it. Okay, Donald Trump tweets, of course, as president, I wanted to share with Russia at an openly scheduled White House meeting, which I have absolute right to do, facts pertaining to terrorism and airline flight safety, humanitarian reasons, plus I want Russia to greatly step up their fight against ISIS and terrorism. Why did you have all your guys go out there and say you didn't share that information? Then you turn around on Twitter and say, I got a legal right to share it. I looked into it, because he just found out. His lawyers came in and said, well, as the president, you could declassify anything you want. You'd probably want to go through a better process than this and maybe check with a couple of people, including our allies, but you could legally do it. So of course somebody told him that. So he goes on Twitter right away. He's like, okay, all right, where is it? Where's my tweeter machine? I shared with the Russians, but I had every right to do it. Well, schmuck, you just threw McMaster under the bus. You just told us he was lying and Dina Powell was lying when they said you didn't share that information. He is historically stupid. Okay, now they got a new excuse they got to come out with today. So here comes Spicer with the new excuse.
When you look at that story, it would be impossible for the president to reveal the source of the information, because as General McMaster made very clear as he was leaving this podium, the president wasn't briefed on the information and wasn't aware of the source. So the president wasn't aware of this. This wasn't part of his briefing. So therefore, to suggest that therefore he revealed it is impossible.
Now, we all know that he revealed information. What they're saying now is, well, remember, the president is such an idiot, he doesn't read his briefings. And this is true. They used to give 4-page summaries on issues, like, hey, you're going to talk to the Russians, you're going to talk to the leader of Australia or Germany. Here's a 4-page briefing on what you should know. He refused to read them. They boiled it down to 1 page, and he demanded bullet points and graphs and maps. How do you fit all that in 1 page? Because he doesn't want to read. It bores him because he's a petulant child. So now there are new excuses. Now remember, the president's an idiot and doesn't read his briefings anyway. So he didn't know exactly who gave him that information and how he got it. He had the information and shared it with the Russians, but he didn't know where it came from. Ay, ay, ay. McMaster has the same excuse. Watch.
And I should just make maybe the statement here that the president wasn't even aware, you know, of where this information came from. He wasn't briefed on the source and method of the information either.
Remember, the president's an idiot. He doesn't know anything. He told him highly classified information, but he doesn't know where it came from because he doesn't read his briefings. Did that help? Final quote for you guys comes from Donald Trump. He tweets, unbelievably, this is not an old tweet, this is a recent tweet, just from today. I've been asking Director Comey and others from the beginning of my administration to find the leakers in the intelligence community. But dude, we found the leaker. It's you. You just leaked to the Russians. So mission accomplished. You figured out who the leaker was. It's the first thing Donald Trump has done. Okay. Okay, last thing real quick. Okay, related to this story, okay? Now, I know from the Republicans that endangering classified information is a very serious offense. I know this because they chanted "lock her up" about Hillary Clinton because she used a private server that might have endangered information. It didn't actually endanger the information. To the best of our knowledge, the Russians or any other enemies that we have or allies did not get that information, but she endangered it and they thought it was outrageous. Now, at the time, Paul Ryan said, individuals who are extremely careless with classified information should be denied further access to such info. Well, that's a little uncomfortable given that Donald Trump was now extremely careless with classified information inside the Oval Office and shared it with the Russian foreign minister and the Russian ambassador. He told them about a plan regarding ISIS that Israeli intelligence had given to us and warned us not to share even with our allies, let alone people like the Russians who are allied with Iran, who is fighting against Israel behind the scenes. Oops. So Paul Ryan, do you think that's it? Donald Trump should not have access to classified information anymore? He probably secretly does think that. Anyway, at the time he had said, given Clinton's record of extraordinary lack of discretion and judgment, the risk is just too great. Well, given what Donald Trump has done now, our allies agree the risk of giving top secret information to the Americans is apparently too great. Okay, now you think it's just Paul Ryan? No, here's another guy who thought it was an egregious thing to do, to risk sharing classified information with people who shouldn't have it.
It's clear from the FBI report that Hillary Clinton lied about her handling of confidential information. She said she couldn't recall details about her mishandling of classified information.
Outrageous, ridiculous. Lock her up, lock her up. That's not all, let's go to the tweets. You know, when it comes to Donald, there's ample evidence here. This is from during the campaign. He said, crooked Hillary Clinton and her team were, quote, extremely careless in their handling of very sensitive, highly classified information, not fit. Well, you said it, brother. Okay, anyone who's extremely careless in handling classified information, not fit for office. I didn't say it, Donald Trump said it. Here's another quote. WikiLeaks proves even the Clinton campaign knew crooked, mishandled classified info, but no one gets charged, rigged. Okay, so I guess he thinks that if you mishandle classified information like that, you should be charged. Good to know. Lock him up, lock him up. Okay, here's another one. The real scandal here is that classified information is illegally given out by intelligence like candy. Very un-American. I don't think it gets more given out like candy than the Russian ambassador and foreign minister walking into your office and you go, hey, did you know what ISIS is up to? Let me tell you our top secret classified information about what ISIS is going. And maybe you want to go share that with Iran. Very un-American indeed. Final one for you guys. The real story that Congress, the FBI, and all others should be looking into is leaking of classified information. Must find leaker now. Good news for you, Donald. You found him. Again, it's you. That was from back in March. And after an exhaustive search, Donald Trump finally looked in the mirror. All right, we have more stories for you guys in the so-called second hour, and they are devastating, including Rahm Emanuel. He's got a new idea on unity for us. Can't wait.